But one single day when I got frustrated, I say, you know, I put you in diapers. Because if you don't can't make it to the toilet, then we will be cleaning shit on the floor, right? So he said, I wear diapers, you wear diapers. But during COVID, we were doing a lot of things in Zoom, right? My realization is I can't shit and talk at the same time. I don't know how many of you can, but I can't do this and then shit at the same time, right? I have this pangsai bin. Everybody has, right? It's just that we don't look at ourselves in the mirror and shit,
shitting
right?
face, yeah, okay.
Yeah, but he can do it with like just ease, right? And he's still continuing watching the TV, but I can't do it. I can't do it here. I can't do it sitting on a chair and then I tend to get restless. I tend to trip over my words. I tend to stammer a lot because I need to shit. And I can't do it in a pair of diapers. So think about it again, right? Is it really necessary to put your loved ones in things like as simple as putting them in a pair of diapers? Is it because we, for ease of cleaning up? For what? For taking their dignity and shaming them? For what, right? If you yourself can't do it, don't expect someone else to be able to do it. So we go out bringing a lot of wet wipes, extra clothing, extra underwear, because if you saw it, you saw it. Yeah, and that's one of the stories that I want to say, hey, please don't take that away from them, the dignity piece.
Yeah, I agree.
Death has always been a certainty.
That's what I like about Anjali. It has to be a celebration.
Endless topics that we can talk about.
Dying to meet you.
Welcome to my podcast.
Hi! Hello, Aki. And welcome to another episode of Dying to Meet You. I am so privileged today to be welcomed by this, of course not just Daniel, but also by this little cute one who's going to be what? Are you going to be bombing? He's going to be bombing our podcast. This is Aki, the very talented dog who is so energetic. But of course, the real guest today is Daniel. Daniel, thank you for joining us at Dying to Meet You.
Hi, morning.
Yeah, morning. I think, you know, first thing, when I first met Daniel, I think it was at Enabling Festival. Some of you would have known Daniel because he's really, really very active in this dementia community. And I really, really was very touched by his story and his sharing when we were at the World Aging Festival just 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And you did a sharing and I could tell the entire room was very, very touched by what you have been doing, by the, you know, the commitment you have given to your family. So, you know, without further ado, maybe Daniel, you can just do a short introduction about what you do.
Hi, everyone. My name is Daniel Lim. I'm a family caregiver for my father with dementia for the last 15 years. And at the same time, I'm caring for my mom with cancer and frailty. And mommy is in and out the hospital. And daddy's 85 this year, mommy's 80, and I'm a single child, a product of a single child population policy. And I've been caring for them for the last 15 years.
Yeah.
So that's in short. The other side of it is I still am very passionate about caregiving, and especially caregivers like myself, from the family perspective. So Enable Asia was started about 6 years ago to look at single child, family caregivers, only child, unmarried child, all that, right, had to do with caregiving, but from a family perspective. So that's our area of interest.
Yeah. So yeah, you know, I think Daniel, when you did the sharing, I think what really amazed a lot of us was how you have, I think you actually give up your job.
Yeah.
And then to, you know, instead of a 9-to-5 job, to take care of your parents. And I don't think you're just addressing to just caregivers, but you know, the challenge nowadays that we have seen, support ratio is, you know, dwindling. I have only one child, and that's my biggest worry.
Yeah.
I come from a family with four children, so I have three other siblings. And I always felt like there was a bit of a shared responsibility, right? Mm. So whenever I can't make it, my sister will come in, or my brother will step in.
Yeah.
But when I think about my daughter, I get worried, like, oh, you know, how is she going to manage? So I think, yeah, that's the stress that I could sort of resonate in a way. Have you ever wanted, like, one more sibling maybe?
So I think it's good and bad. I think when I was growing up, it was easy being the only child because everything was given to you. You had the luxury of a lot of things. You don't have to fight for your toys. You don't have to get the hand-me-downs or hand down your items. But I've never had the feeling of having another person as my family member, or to share certain good days or bad days with them, other than daddy and mommy. I never had someone like a sibling, right? I would never know how it feels like. And also it doesn't come along with the tough decision-making things. Like, if we want to do this for mommy and daddy, we just do it. We don't have to consult the rest of the world.
That's true. I mean, it is true because, you know, in my line of work, sometimes having too many siblings could be quite a problem.
Yeah, and mommy wants this, daddy wants that, and then it becomes a little bit too cumbersome to even move forward.
Yes.
In fact, we delay decision making. If it's like for mommy's situation, she said that, look, I don't want to, I'm refusing all treatment. I don't want to get intubated, I don't want to be resuscitated, don't put me on life support. If I die, just take me from my that hospital bed to the mortuary, and then to the undertakers, and then to the crematorium. And I says that, wow, mommy, you're quite progressive in that in that thought, right? And she says, let's make it formal. Let's put it down in a ACP, so that the doctors honor my wishes and not keep asking me about whether you want to send mommy for further diagnosis. You want to treat mommy. You want to do this. You want to do that. Actually, mommy says she doesn't want all this stuff. And when she's ready to go, she's ready to go. A lot of us is we are holding back and saying, mommy, cannot go, right? It's because we're just not ready to let them go. I felt that was revelation for me when my mom's most recent trip to the hospital. It gave me a lot of understanding about where in her point of life that she has. She has a very happy life for the last 15 years. We staved her for the first time around. And she has this extended time with us, and she's happy about it. She's seen me grow to become the person that I am, and to see daddy grow with her, and I think that's good enough for her, and I think that should be good enough for us, as compared to trying to make mommy go through all the operations again and doing all that medication, and her quality of life, her dignity will be compromised if we forced her. Yeah, that's what I'm saying, and that's what I'm thinking right now.
Yeah. I think, in fact, just so that the audience know, when Daniel was saying ACP, it stands for Advanced Care Planning. In fact, this, I think, has been a government's initiative to encourage more and more people to do ACP when you're mentally sound, when you're able to make decisions. Yeah. So, Advanced Care Planning, just generally note down what kind of care treatment you would like to have a conversation with your family. So, I think it's very, very nice, in fact, very brave of your mom to go through that and decide for herself and make it easy for you, because that's what Advanced Care Planning is. Not to be complicated or mixed up with Advanced Medical Directive.
Yeah.
So Advanced Medical Directive, you're talking about, do not resuscitate you when you are, do not extend your life with any life-sustaining methods. That's AMD. So a lot of times when I meet customers, they always ask me, what's the difference? Do I need ACP if I have AMD? Well, personally, I haven't done my AMD. The reason is because when I discuss with my husband, when I told him what's the difference, he said, oh, could you don't do AMD?
Yeah.
Can you let me decide? So AMD, basically, I make the decision. In the event that I, am unconscious and terminally ill, this too has the criteria
to kick in.
AMD, the attending physician or the doctor would then have the right to help me sort of let me go.
Yeah.
And of course, you need two other doctors. So you need in total three doctors to unanimously all agree that, my life is okay to the end already.
Yeah.
Then they will terminate, or they were not, maybe not terminate. I shouldn't use that word because it's not to be mixed up with euthanasia, you know? Yeah, but basically they just were not execute any more life-sustaining treatment.
Yeah.
And the family will not even have a say.
Yeah.
My husband come back, the doctor, and say, please don't do this, don't execute this.
But because the AMD is an act.
Exactly.
It's a policy.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. The ACP, however, is a preference.
Correct.
Yeah.
So that's why I actually did the ACP advocate class. And then when I discussed with my husband, he said, can you don't do AMD because I want to decide for you when I'm ready.
Yeah.
And then, but I did tell him, like, please don't let me suffer. So we both agree we don't want to let each other suffer. And that also gives me the power to make a decision for him.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, this part about ACP, I think I definitely would like to encourage more public to consider doing this, because it's not just helping yourself, but also helping family members like Daniel here, right?
Because my mind's really very overwhelmed with caring for daddy. If mommy makes it easier to tell me how she wants to leave, then it takes one item off that list of future thinking, right?
Exactly.
If we just have so much capacity and that's it.
True, but
the conversation is very difficult with my dad, however. So it's not always nice and rosy on every front, right? Yeah. If not, then I'll have it easy as a caregiver. But daddy is more reserved. It's more like, what are you asking me, right? You're asking me to hurry up, die.
True. You know, there's not a lot of misconceptions.
Yeah, so that's like both sides of the same coin, right? I mean, you're seeing both in the same family. So it's not like, you know, upbringing is different. It's just that it's happening in my own family. It's one mom, one dad, right? You can't tell which part more, which part less. So
let me just come back to first of all, it sounds like your parents got married at a later age.
Super late, right? He was 42 when he had me.
Oh,
so I'm about 42 years difference from my dad. So it looks like I'm taking care of my grandfather. I get that a lot on the streets,
because,
right?
Yeah, back then people get married earlier.
Yeah, and now because he's 85 and I'm 43, there is, when we go out, that can be a huge visible difference. It's me really taking care of Grams.
Yeah. Right? I mean, back then, you know, it's very unheard of where you have. That's why I was just doing the mental calculation that your parents got married late.
Yeah,
but I think this is something that we all need to know because the society right now, I didn't have my child until I'm 39.
Yeah.
So that's also something that I was very concerned with, like, you know, when I'm 70, am I still able to be so active?
Yeah.
But again, we are seeing a shift in terms of aging now, that people, like the other day we were attending the conference, if you look at Tom Cruise, he's 60 years old, but yet he's still, I don't think he will ever retire in the next 5 years, right? So there's a shift in terms of aging now. But, you know, I want to come back to how and when all this happened, because you share that this was your dad and then your mom. Maybe just give us a bit of a history. At what age did all this happen and how do you feel then?
So it was about 15 years ago when I turned 29, right? I thought, you know, 30 is the time of my life. But in November 2009, that was the worst time of my life, because in a single month, back to back, mom was diagnosed with cancer, dad was diagnosed with dementia. So I thought I won the Academy Award, like cancer, dementia, right? And back then, I mean, cancer was like the acute issue that we need to resolve. So dementia was progressively, you know, it's a long-term thing. So we held off like doing much for daddy. But he also played up his role as the husband to my mom. So he said, you know, solve mommy's problems first, and then mine can be later. Because I won't suddenly tomorrow lose my mind, right? It's this long tail thing. So yeah, we managed to solve mommy. Mommy had went through 16 chemo jabs, which took almost like every 3 weeks once. So you take that, that's almost a half a year situation. And it's crazy because no one ever takes that many chemo jabs, right? And every 3 weeks, we're at the hospital, 21 days to begin with, and it was just too much for me to handle as a young person. I mean, I can't just ask mommy to go take cab to go to chemo. It is, I've got to bring her there, and each time it's 2-3 hours. It affects work. It affects the job that
what
I was in.
At?
I was in LaSalle College of the Arts. We were doing marketing. We were doing student recruitment to bring in students into arts, right? And back then, I must thank my manager and the organization, because I just started working. There's not much savings. There's nothing in it. In the family, a lot of them put money aside for mommy's treatments, because mommy used to be a nurse. She never believed in insurance. And we never bought any, because she and her spouse were cared for life, right? Until the time they retired. So the time they retired is really not possible to buy anything. If it is, it was going to be too much riders, too expensive to even cover them. And so happened, right, that we won the Academy Award, right? Oh, shit, why us, right? There was nothing left in the family after that. So I'm very thankful too today that my colleagues back then actually really put money aside to support us through the initial phase. And that's why I think it's important to have support in terms of whether workplace support, the community support as well. So 2009, bad year, 15 years fast forward, better time now, but it felt like it's just begun, because we're still going through the same situation. It's just that we're better able to handle the current situation, but it feels like it's a never-ending road.
Yeah.
down that same tunnel, right? 23 of us, it's still 3 of us, it's nothing more, nothing less.
Yeah, I wanted to emphasize because you do not have a helper.
Yeah, not for the last 15 years.
Yeah, so he single-handedly took care of both parents. I think this is very notable. I mean, you have people with like 4 children and they can't even take care of one parent.
Yeah.
But the fact that you single-handedly still take care and you believe in giving them the care 100%.
Yeah.
And I think that's very noble of you. And I guess that's also why that they, the audience were so touched by your action.
Yeah. It is a challenge, really. But I reframe that because in the first year or two, it was, why me, right? It's the time of my life. I'm thriving at 30. Mm. Why am I bestowed this challenge of being a caregiver?
Yeah.
There's nothing to teach us all our lives, not in handbooks, not in school, to be a caregiver. We just drop at the deep end of the pool and say, hey, you know, you just got to try and swim, right? And not many people can. Not when you're 29 and you're trying to discover the world, right? You just got to make certain decisions that perhaps at the back of my mind, another 15 years down the road, I might look back and say, maybe I should just have outsource my caregiving, right? Nobody knows. I didn't know better, but there wasn't resources, there wasn't support that readily available today.
Mm.
Yeah, and looking back, I think a lot of the caregiving skills is that why we don't have a helper is one thing is because daddy didn't want somebody else in the house. The second thing is because I think the way we do it supports caregiving from me to them without having a helper, because if you can enable your loved ones to continue doing what you're doing, then you shouldn't do it for them. So just case in point, right? If he can continue to pour a cup of coffee and spread his butter on his bread and open the lids to his jam and kaya, why should we do it for him? Because if we do that for him, eventually over time, he expects somebody to do it because we're complacent. Yeah, so every time I have to whack him, right?
Really
whack
him.
But to not really whack him, but to challenge him.
Yeah.
To do certain things, because the more he's challenged, the more he's able to do it. It frees up a lot of our time to do other things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that is a mindset to this, because most of the time we are saying, hey, let's take the easy way out, get a helper, then I can go and do my own thing, right? But then naturally he or she will not be able to do their things if it's being done for them. The same thing is for kids, right? Remember the backpack situation, the army boy? I mean, it's just that, right?
Yeah,
yeah. And so that was the ethos to caring for them, because I know I'm only one, and if they can do it for themselves, we are three strong. Yeah,
I think the part is we always want to empower, and I absolutely agree. You know, like my daughter, even though we have a helper, reason why we have a helper was also because we are always at work, because he's always traveling. Sometimes I get called in to work even on a Sunday, and thank God my helper is really kind enough not to go out on Sunday at times, even though she has a Sunday off. But the part about empowering, so I have a very strict rule at home, which is when my daughter was 5 months old, she must eat by herself.
Yeah.
So I was very strict with that. I even told my helper, you cannot feed my daughter.
Yeah.
So until now, it's still, you know, something I believe in. And she can make a mess. I don't really mind she make a mess, but she must eat by herself.
Yeah.
So now, you know, when we go out, she's able to conduct herself and not have someone watch or like
constantly, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it takes up, like, I can have a conversation with my friend.
Yeah.
My daughter is sitting next to me, and we can have a nice meal.
It's somewhat independent, but under supervision.
Yeah. So just put the food, she will handle it herself.
Yeah.
I don't need to like, okay, eat, you know, finish. And I think that's the part where we want to empower. And even for dementia patients, I always see there's a reverse, you know, like a reverse in terms of when you were a kid, daddy was the one taking care of you. And unfortunately or fortunately, you have the honor to take care of him and for the last 15 years.
Yeah.
And not only that, but you discover how to empower him. And like, yeah, I totally agree, if you can open up a jar of, you know, kaya, why do it for him? And I think there's a lot of, you know, nuggets of wisdom that I definitely think our audience will love to hear more.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those 15 years, I mean, what was challenging? Because someone asked me this question, and maybe I should pose this to you.
Yeah.
If there is an illness that you can cure, you have the power, you have superpower and you can cure, what would be the illness you want it to be cured in this lifetime?
Oh, it's a bad choice, right? Because daddy, mommy, right?
Yeah.
Like, But I think dementia is something that we can work on, modifiable factors or lifestyle factors that we can help to somewhat prevent. May not be a cure to it, but it's prevention is always better than a cure. I mean, if I may reverse that that question out, it says that I don't want to cure it, I want to prevent it from even happening, then I don't have to cure it. I think that's my take, and a lot of it is decision making about, it could be food choices, it could be exercise choices, it could also be things of social connections. I think a lot of it, it's the medical setting helps with the physical, the medications and all that, but the individual, the family side helps with the social connections. I think if I can make it better, I think more families should have better conversations. We can always tell better, we can always ask better, we can always suggest better options for things. It's just that having realized that my 29 years at the start, I never had great conversations with my father. It's only when daddy had dementia that we had better conversations, right? So comparing my first half of my life and whatever half that's now, I think we have better conversations, better communications, even though he's living with dementia. And I think that's the greatest gift I can have, is really to, if you know what they like, then you can prescribe the care for them that they want. Because most of the time in our adult life, we think that we're always right. But we are absolutely wrong when it comes to caregiving, because we never ask our seniors how they like to be cared for. And I think if we do that properly, I think your caregiving journey would have been a better one, rather than you administer the care and then you go into a conflict, it becomes worse, and then you resent caring, and then you hope that, you know, there's a silver bullet that can save your loved ones from going to whatever conditions that they're going to. So why not start years earlier? So it's also for those who are not even as part of the caregiving journey yet. You could be a grandchild looking at your parents caring for your grandparents, but be sure your time will come, right? Because there's no freaking escape to this whole caregiving journey. I mentioned it before and I'll do it again. You're either a current caregiver, a former caregiver, a future caregiver, or one day, right, you're going to be someone that people care for. So you're not going to escape, right? So the better you articulate or understand the preferences of how to care for someone, I think the better it is. So to answer your question again, just to close that situation, a cure is great. But I think the prevention piece would be even better. I think that story, right? It's just like, but how many of us really take prevention or preventive actions? Because if it doesn't happen to you, you don't give a shit, right? That's really the...
like, why me? And then like, oh,
yeah,
boom.
Yeah, and you know it's coming, but yet you don't do it, right?
That's so true.
Let's ask the audience, right? How many of us really walk 5,000 steps a day, right? Instead of 10?
Or you just shake that.
Yeah, we just keep doing this, right? And then...
shake your wrist. I was at lunchtime. I was like, what is the lady doing? And she keep doing this. It's like, oh, okay, counting the steps.
Yeah, so you are moving 5,000 rotations, but you're not really exercising.
Wrist rotation. Yeah, that's exercise too, you know, not the steps.
So I think, again, it's the mindset that I need to take ownership of my own health so that I can be better. Then I can administer help for others, right? It's like the oxygen mask theory, right? You gotta make sure that you are good before you help someone else.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, I think that part, you know, we definitely want to talk about self-care, because this is something that I strongly encourage. And even for my industry, I have a lot of self-care myself. Sometimes it get me bad. Like January this year, I lost two friends. And actually, yeah, it affects me a lot. It got me quite bad and I had to hibernate. Didn't want to be social, then people ask me like, oh, you stopped wanting to come out. And I said, I'm just busy. But actually the real thing is I was just grieving and I didn't want to meet anybody. So, and someone actually said like, hey, you're in the funeral industry, I would think you would be the most desensitized person on earth. And then I'm like, wow, do you think like just because we are in the funeral industry, we have a...
no emotions?
Yeah, exactly.
No feelings.
And that baffled me a bit. Like, is that what people think of us, right? So it took me a while, maybe about March or April, then I sort of bounced back. But it was through salsa dancing and exercise that sort of got me like, oh, okay, maybe I need to dissipate it. Because a lot of times we don't show it. Like, I think people who are, especially who are caregivers, you see someone who's so bubbly like you, if you don't tell us your story and I think I meet you on the street, I will never think, oh, Daniel is actually taking care of a pair of parents. And I think that's the part where we need to be very kind, because sometimes people are just projecting some of the stress, and it, they may be going through something deeper that we don't see.
So
and people who are the most bubbliest, maybe they are also going something.
Happy depressions, right?
So maybe let's talk about, you know, how it was for you. Because first, 29, you said you should be having the time of your life. How did that affect your entire life or your plans? Maybe you had a dream to be something, and then at 29, things were put on pause, you know. What was it for
you? I lost a lot of friends. To be very honest, because at 29, I mean, everyone's having their time of their life. So if we're talking about diapers, they're talking about baby diapers. I'm talking about, you know, any folks understand what adult diapers look like? I don't. I mean, we're talking about diapers, but we kind of miss each other. And then when we talk about formula milk, it is about DHA formula milk for the kids' brains. I'm asking if there's any formula milk to keep my seniors' brains going. And then we end up with ancient milk, and then we end up with all those kind of formula milk for nutrition for the elderly. It's just, we're talking about milk, but we kind of miss each other again. So a lot of times my peers could not understand what I was going through. And then thankfully, naturally found older folks who are going through that situation. So most of my friends today are in their 50s, almost hitting 60s, when I'm in my 40s, because I kind of have that skip generation, right? So I can't relate to those who are my age, because they're pursuing their dreams, their cars, their careers, their jobs and all that. I'm just saying I'm caring for my loved ones, right? I kind of felt I was very detached from the rest of the world. And at that point, I think it was the lowest point of my life, because that's really the part is like, I don't fit in with my batch or my cohort or my that group of people, and I don't know where I fit in, because I don't have an identity. No, I don't have a caregiver tattoo on my face when I go out. Nobody recognizes as a caregiver, like what you said, right? I mean, even at workplace, if you don't share, who would know? Nobody would know. Your employers, your new employers wouldn't know. And if they knew, would they hire you? That's the question, right? That's a big question I have, because I had to change a job that could pay better and so I can support mom and dad better. But if I didn't go out, and if I did go out and say that I was a caregiver, I need a lot of time away from work, because I need to settle all their appointments in the hospital, it's not easy, I would never have gotten the job. So looking back, I felt that, hey, you know what, I kind of like maybe had to give up being honest with myself. I took a job that I enjoy. I've always been in education. I love the idea that education is the enabler, because it takes us out of the rat race, right? Those who did not have can now enjoy a privilege of going back to school. Because I never had, after tertiary education, I never had full-time education. A lot of it is about upgrading. A lot of it is about learning new knowledge. So I found my respite care going to school. So I've never stopped studying since 29. Every 1 or 2 years, I'll put myself into a program. Not because I want the certification, but in a school setting, I can meet new people. I can meet people who are like-minded, because you are undertaking a certain program, you have similar interests at least. Then at least we can talk about it then, because I never get a chance to do that in an office setting. Never get a chance to do that in any social setting, right? Imagine going to a club and meeting someone else and say, hey, I'm a caregiver. It's damn cool, right? Oh, thank you very much. You know, you're not going to buy me a drink. So it's never going to happen. So the sad bit is that, yeah, really lost a lot of friends, could not understand, could not relate. And I thought I was shouldering this alone in this journey, because relatives don't know much. I mean, so what, right? The question is, so what, right? Yeah, and I don't know how to do it. So how, right? I felt like I was drowning, not swimming. That's where it became a bit... I felt very disillusioned with life.
So, you know, I think, Daniel, maybe you can share a little bit about, you know, daddy's sort of cognitive ability.
Yeah.
What's he like? I think a lot of people
Yeah.
probably may be going through that, and then they may also want to know what are your tactics or techniques, lah, not tactics, to handle. Like kids, you know, when we always exchange notes. I exchange notes with a lot of parents, like, what do you do if your child is like that? Or, yeah, what should you do? And then you listen and then you see what fits, right? So what about for you, like taking care of dad and mom?
Yeah, so at the start, I couldn't quite comprehend what was going on. And then I realized that actually he's not trying to give me a hard time. He himself is going through a hard time trying to comprehend his situation, his hallucinations, his inability to remember certain things, his loss of abilities that he's going to be facing. The fact that medication supports in terms of the cognitive enhancers, but what was more important, I think, is the time we spend together noticing his likes, his dislikes, his little pet peeves. And then we have a conversation about it. So instead of, like, even just talking about food, right? Instead of just asking daddy what he wants to eat, obviously he cannot remember what he wants to eat, right? Why not show him a picture menu? Right? As simple things like that. And then he decides he can choose, right? So the idea is giving him that choice. Because when he decides on it, he tends to make a responsible choice and he tends to be more committed to it.
Wow.
So that's we know fish soup is good for him, right? So I just put fish soup in front of him every day. Then when he cannot decide so many things, right? Then he just decide fish soup water, but instead of me prescribing that fish soup to him, he said it himself. So he's more likely not to fight and argue with me when we bring back fish soup.
Like giving them that power, I think that empowerment, because I mean, fortunately I didn't have to take care of anyone with dementia. But I hear so many stories of people going through and how they take care of family members who have dementia. But I really realized that the part about empowerment and about dignity, you know, when my grandmother was discharged from the hospital, she was actually hospitalized for a few days. And then I remember my family were all trying to find a commode chair. And my grandfather had stroke for 19 years. And he didn't have the quality of life. And he was exactly what you shared about being prescribed with, like,
everyone
helper.
Prescribed him anything.
Yeah, just like feeding him, my uncle would feed him. And we never asked my akong what he wants. And I always remember I'm the sort of the black sheep, right? Because Chinese New Year, my grandfather, I love sitting next to my grandfather when I'm at the house. And then just, you know, like stroking his arms and all that. Because he, when we were kids, he always bring us out. So yeah, I just like being close to him and letting him know he's not alone. And then he will nudge me and then he will point to the pineapple tarts.
Because
it's like the left side he can't move, so he will.
But
like
right point. Side still working.
So he like that, and then he point, then I look at my uncle, then I have to whisper to my grandfather, like, okay, wait for Aku to go first, okay? Then I will give you. Because my akong, my uncle, he is a little bit conservative. He's like, no, he's gonna choke, no this, no that. But I just feel that, hey, you know, if for someone who has lost all the ability to go out and have food, what is this little luxury, right?
And then can you imagine everybody else eating, drinking, and then like in front of him,
so, so then I have to wait until, because I was living with them for about 2 years and with my grandparents, and that was the best 2 years, because to me, I get to understand, oh, actually what we take it for granted, it was very difficult chore for them, right? So like even just taking a shower, my grandmother has to sit on the toilet bowl, and things like just walking to the washroom,
not easy.
Yeah, it's not easy. And then I remember when my akong so wanted pineapple tarts, and I personally have to try different pineapple tarts, and I only choose the one where the crust is very soft, it melts.
Can melt.
Yeah, so I have to, and I found this pineapple tarts, and my mom gets it every year.
Yeah.
So then my mom makes pineapple tarts, but I told her that because of the pineapple itself, it will stick to the tongue, so it's very difficult. So I always crush it, then I would just give him little bites, you know, even the, what do you call it, barbecue pork. Right,
enjoys it, I'm sure.
And just very small for it come, you know, just to
have that flavor and that taste, right?
So I'm the rebel, lah. So then every year now, after that, my auntie will be the one who's like, hey, later give akong this one. I was like, okay, so wait for my aku to leave again.
But that's great. That's understanding their needs and wants.
Correct,
And so, putting their interests.
I think that's the part where I learned so much, especially when after my grandma was discharged, they wanted to get a commode chair. Because my grandmother's room to the toilet is quite a distance. And because of her weak legs, she wasn't able to make it.
Mm.
So we had incidents before she was hospitalized where she just releases before. So then the helper, my grandfather's helper, have to clean out. And my grandma is someone who is very proud and someone who doesn't want to rely on people.
Yeah.
And she didn't want to be on a wheelchair for many years, right? Even though she has very weak legs. So in the end, I have to go around looking for a commode chair, and I found this Japanese product, which we still have it, but the condition of the sofa is not as good. So what happened is, it's like a sofa, it's like a chair like this.
Yeah.
It's very dignified because you can't even tell that it's actually a toilet bowl.
Yeah.
So then you lift up this cover.
Yeah.
It becomes a toilet bowl.
Whoa.
Okay. And then this toilet bowl is packed with a tray with lots of it's like a plastic. So it has a button, like a red and a green button. And so after my grandmother, you know, in the before she sleeps, she will open up the sofa. So it's just next to her bed. So straight away, if she needs to release or she needs to do her motion, she just have to go, just scoop herself over, sit, does whatever she does, press the green button. So this bag, the toilet, it really shapes like a toilet bowl. It will then lower down the bag, and then it will seal with a hot seal.
Yeah.
And then it will drop. So what happened is inside, before you do that, you have to put a cup of like perforated paper.
Yeah.
So it actually turns into gel form. So then it will drop onto the tray.
Wow.
And there's no smell. And that brought so much dignity to my grandmother.
Yeah.
She didn't need to rely on a helper. She didn't need helper to stay in the room.
Yeah.
She just had so much power, empowered her to like, hey, I can have a decent life. I can still live with dignity. So I think, yeah, you know, even just that idea of using photograph to show your dad, I think that's empowering them to make decisions rather than we say, hey, this is what you
this is what they need to do and all that. And also I give instruction cards because daddy can still read. So that's the beauty of it, right? He can still take instructions. Like, we all follow numbers, right? 1 to 5 and 6. So like in the morning, it'll be like, you got to take your blood pressure. You've got to, you know, read the newspaper. And then after that, you can go and get yourself a cup of coffee and then get yourself breakfast.
Yeah,
and then after that, please continue to rest of the day with your medication and all that stuff. So even if he forgets certain things, even if you read the newspaper twice, so be it, right?
Yeah,
we got a lot of time at home, too fast anyway. And if he spends 2 hours reading the newspapers, that's great.
Yeah.
Because he's spending 2 hours doing something that exercises his mind.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Then we always make him the designated dishwasher because we eat and then he washes. But that's great, right?
I think that's good.
And then he says that, let me wash it, right? Yeah. So he still exercises his hand-eye coordination, playing with water, knowing when it's hot, when it's soapy, and what's dirty. Yeah. So there's still some level of orientation for daddy because you're asking, at what level is daddy now? So I think he's at moderate now, but moderate with high functioning. So he can still put on his shoes, still put on his clothing. He will like to buckle his belt because he thinks he wants to look good, feel good. And he can still groom. So now during COVID, he has a nice little goatee, right? So he grooms his goatee, right? So a lot of us will say, please don't give a daddy a pair of scissors, right? Because he's probably going to cut himself. But he still grooms his beard and his nose hair.
Wow.
So I say that if he can do that for himself, I'm quite certain he won't take the knife and poke us. Right, or the scissors and cut us accidentally. Because
is that something that people
usually they will advise against it. Because they think that the seniors will not be, it's like putting a knife in the hand of
a child.
Yeah, and it's not great, right? But at least he knows his own. But because we used it in the form of making him look good, he wants to look good, so he'll be mindful about it, right? So if he cuts himself, then you're not going to look good for at least 1-2 days now. You're going to have a plaster on it. But you know, we learn from that.
Yeah.
And I think even at his stage of dementia, he still can. So he still uses the butter knife.
Good.
So that's great, right? You're actually putting a knife in the hand of a senior who is not of sound mind, right? But still does it.
I liked it. You know, when we were at the Aging Asia, World Aging Festival, there was a cafe that was run by Mystic Cafe. It was a group of dementia patient. This concept came from Japan.
Yeah.
And I thought that was very empowering, right? That you allow all this. People go in with the mindset that, oh, maybe my orders will be mistaken because it's being served by all this.
Persons living with dementia.
But it's lovely because to me, I feel that there's a need. Even if we have something like this in Singapore, I think that would be great. Because then we can also show and bring our children to have a better understanding what this illness is about, because at this moment, last I checked,
there's still no cure,
but yeah. We are better equipped, like you said, with knowledge and how to care, yeah. How can we prevent, you know, I heard Mahjong is one of the methods, you know, to prevent it, but yeah, just exercising the mind, and I think that's also the part where I keep encouraging people, please do your LPA, lasting power of attorney, because that is something that the government has been trying to encourage people to do it, and they have been like extending the waiver, the fee waiver. Yeah, because decision making, you are the only child. But when you have many children, who is to make decision for you?
Yep.
And you want to be able to give that power to that person without any delay. If you don't have a LPA in hand, lasting power of attorney, then you know the family members have to get a court deputyship, which will usually take about a few months.
And longer costs, and more expensive.
Yeah, more expensive. And you're talking about like 9,000, 10,000 that the lawyer charges for the court deputyship.
Yep.
Whereas for the LPA, Form 1, doctor certification, the certificate issuer only charges like 100, some even 50.
Yeah, 50 to about 100 plus.
Yeah, so don't miss that opportunity. You know?
Like what I did, right? Whatever you said, it was exactly true, right? The missed opportunity is now daddy can't do it. And we're in a fix, right? Because we need to go and get the court order and
absolutely,
all that stuff,
yeah.
which is a bit more...
Because 15 years ago, you probably couldn't do...
There wasn't LPA in online. It was LPA in a physical paper format.
Yes,
and then it's do not start somewhere, right?
But now, the good news is...
It's online!
It's online! So please don't delay it, because I strongly... I mean, you know, I always say that people come to me too, you know, and I think, Daniel, you probably heard something like this. So they always ask me, hey, so Angelie, you know, if I have LPA, do I still need a will? Or if I have will, do I still need an LPA? Yes, you need, because it's two different things. Will kick in when you kick the bucket, when you pass away. And LPA is in the event, in case you have dementia or you lose your mental capacity, LPA kicks in. So it's a little bit like your insurance, right? In case you get dementia.
Yeah, and doing it early is good, because just wanted to point out an area where a lot of concerns is the finance piece, right? So if you get your LPA done right, you and whoever that you care for can now go to the bank and say that, well, I need to put a joint account name because my dad can no longer be part of this whole experience. I need to withdraw the money that he has to take care of him.
Yep.
You don't want the money to get stuck in the bank.
Yeah, absolutely.
And nobody's going to give you that joint account name just like that. And on diagnosis, you're not going to be able to do that because they know your loved ones already of non-mental capacity, right? And they won't let you put your name into a joint account because they might think that you're scamming daddy and mommy just to get off their money.
Absolutely.
So do it right? So that's the piece of advice that I think would be useful.
In fact, you know, a lot of times when people come to me, it's usually like, oh, Angelie, my mom, I think she's moderate, borderline. I'm a bit concerned. So I remember this story, in fact, just a few days ago when my friend, I had to take care of my friend's father's funeral. But 2 weeks earlier, he was about to do his LPA because he was worried that he will not be able to make decision. So actually, that 2 weeks, the father's condition deteriorated.
Yeah.
So they couldn't get him an LPA now.
Yeah.
And then they tried to get the court deputyship. So it was 2 weeks in the court deputyship, then he passed away. But I also have stories where it takes 9 months. We took care of a lady's husband's suddenly had a stroke at work, and then he, of course, everything parked under his name.
Yeah.
So they have this Tabi Hoon, a prawn noodle store at Tampines, and then this uncle, everything was in his account. Yeah. His wife is always supporting him, you know, not very educated, so just leave it to the husband because he's the one running the store.
Yeah.
So she goes there to help with to fry. And then when he lost his mental capacity, he can't just go to, just to let you know, you can't just go to the bank and say, look, I am the wife, I have a marriage cert. It doesn't work that way. So the bank needed her to produce this court deputyship. And it took us 9 months. So I remember this because it was the first year of COVID.
Yeah.
And 9 months, even though I told the lawyer, please help her to expedite, because every day she still continued to open the store. And back then, COVID period, it was so difficult.
Of course,
it was very challenging.
And can you imagine the zero income to take care of?
Exactly. You can't touch her account. So basically, she has to continue with her store. The sister-in-law had to come in to help.
Yeah.
The sister-in-law, being retired, has to come in and help. So I think these are the concerns that a lot of people we don't get to see, but I really hope that, you know, through the stories of what Daniel has shared and I have shared, and maybe open up your ears and listen, there are a lot of people who are going through this, and that's why government keep pushing, do your LPA.
And that's why they extended it for another 3 years.
And it doesn't hit people who are old. And I always feel that this misconception, people who are 40 plus, it could
precisely
also...
So you never know when you're going to expire, or before you expire, you never know when you're going to lose your ability to articulate your wishes, right?
Exactly.
So, you think it's not going to be you, right? But when it happens, you'll be like...
Why me?
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny, right? How we are built.
Yeah, I mean, I can relate, because there are moments when I was younger, you know, why me? Why this happened to me? And then I realized, I switched my
mindset.
Yeah. And I said, why not me? Yeah. And then I start to think, what should I learn from this, right?
Yeah.
So I think there is always a message that the whole entire podcast is really, Dying to Meet You podcast has been created so that your story could help influence and also inspire people to take action.
And
we
shorten the learning curve for people who are going through this for the first time.
Yeah.
We are still going through things for the first time. That's why the sharing is important. Mm. It enriches our knowledge, because we can only learn so much by ourselves, but collectively, the knowledge pool based on the podcast is a lot about sharing, and we can all watch it and learn from each other.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's the beauty of it. And now technology enables us to do this.
Absolutely.
In the past, it was just, I have to go and sign up for a hard pen and paper registration. I need to put it in. I need to wait for that date to appear. And then go down to sit in the conference of some sort, right? Yes. To hear somebody talk.
Yes.
Yeah, but today, because technology is widely available and caregivers don't have time. We need bite-sized information. We need it online when before we sleep, or when we are having our lovely time in the toilet ourselves, we can still, you know, watch a couple of minutes to learn new things.
Yeah. I wanted to share a little bit, you know, the minute I came into your place, this place is like, I was expecting to see your parents.
Yeah.
But I didn't see them, because you actually designed a house in a way.
Mm.
So maybe later we will take a tour and then we can show, you know, how did you create this concept?
The reason why I needed this curated space is because I still think that I have my life. I can still host a friend. I can still do a podcast. I have my little sofa there, which is a 1.5 seater for me and my dog. That's my crying space, right? Everyone needs a space to feel psychologically safe, even in our own house, because a lot of caregivers don't detach themselves from that space. And it also serves as a reminder for my folks that if I'm enclosed in this space, I'm doing work.
Mm.
Yeah, so I try to do that between 9 to 5. Other than lunchtimes, we go have meals together. I try to make sure that I kickstart this routine. That it's almost like, yeah, though we're in the same space, but actually I'm still having my own space within that space.
Yeah.
I think that's really important for caregivers, because most of the time we just go to our room and cry. Or hide in the shower because you turn on the water, then you can't tell.
Or eat a lot of wasabi at the restaurant.
But you see, the important thing is you got to find that safe space in your own house where you can feel vulnerable about it, and to let out your emotions. Because if not, then you will take it out on your loved ones when your emotions are a bit at the tipping point, right? You will take it out on them for sure, right? You will take it out on a pet. You will take it out on something.
Yeah.
Worse is you take it out on yourself. Because you're already doing a good job by caring for your loved ones. You don't want to add on an additional burden and saying that, you know, I got to take it out of myself and feel guilty about it. And fear of not having your own space because it's unjust, right? You need to be 24/7 eyeballing them. It's just, I can still see the CCTV in their rooms, in the dining hall. I can still see them when I'm here, sitting right where I want to be. Although we are just steps apart. Yeah.
I think that's very beautiful. When I stepped in, I didn't feel that, you know, I mean, it's not as much as we want to be in the same space, but I do agree that we need time alone. Like, even for me, I need time alone. Sometimes I can't work from home because my daughter will come in and disturb me.
Yeah.
And even though it's a weekend, I still have work I need to do.
Of course.
Yeah, so then I couldn't have a place where I can escape to.
Yeah.
So you know some things that I do on my side, because I don't have the luxury of having an extra space. So I go for staycation. Yeah, so I just check myself into the hotel where I can be really focused. Yeah. And that to me was needed, even in my line of work as well. So, you know, having to go through this experience, how do you envision, or what changes in your life or your perspective about things?
I think contentment is important. being happy, because I mean, sooner or later we're going to be orphans, right? My mom and dad's going to leave me one day. I'm all alone in the world, you know? No one else. So I think spending good time and great time with folks, it's not about the quantity, but the quality of time, it's important for me now. I never used to want to be at home because I used to think that outside is always better. But now I want to be at home as much as possible because I want to observe what they are like, right? And then with me, it's a nucleus family. It's only three of us in the world, right? And when I lose any one of them, the reality will set in because I don't know what it's like yet because I haven't lost them. So if you ask me what would I think I will be if mommy and daddy are gone, I wouldn't know and how to give the answer to that. But I want to spend as much quality time with them as I can. But quality time could mean anything. It could mean as simple as having a meal, because, or even enjoying mommy's cooking. I think that's important for me, because my lesson that I learned when I was growing up is that once the day my grandma passed away, there's a family recipe that could never be replicated. So mommy has her own specialty, and I want to eat as much of that as possible when mommy is still here. So I realized that when she's gone, right, I'm not skilled enough to replicate that. And if I do replicate that, that will bring back a lot of emotions for me, because I'm having a particular dish that mommy made for me for all my life.
Yeah,
no one's going to do that for you for that long of your life, right? Except mommy or daddy who has been doing it since your birth, right? So yeah. I felt that I think good time, quality time is important with them, and we will all lose it one day. So what are you doing to create that bond with your loved ones when they're still around? No point crying and saying that we should have done this, we should have done that when they're gone. Yeah, so that's the piece that I think my mindset has strongly changed. And a lot of it, it doesn't matter what we do. It's just that we just want to do it together. It could be a simple walk to get our haircuts. Yeah, how often do you have the same haircut as your dad and your mom when we go down to the same barber and do it? And it's an experience for us. Going out is like a freaking holiday for us. Even so, as simple as going to get our haircut or going out for a meal, because we got to pack a lot of things just to get out of the house. Yeah, so that to me is valuable. In my own life, I think being contented and be happy with what I've got, I think appreciating what we have, I think it's important. I mean, I don't think we are the worst. I don't think we're the best either, but we just got to be happy with where we are at. A lot of us chase dreams dreams are great, right? But a lot of us chase dreams that, you know, well, we hope you get, but most of the time we fall behind, we feel terrible about it, but we forget to appreciate the what got us to where we are. I think that's important for me in my life learning lessons.
You know, I think the key message I keep hearing is don't take it for granted, right? So in my line of work, a lot of times we hear regrets. We should have done this, we should have done that. So I'm reading this book about five tops regret that you, five top things you must do before you die. And I'm also reading another book called Power of Regret. Right? Actually, regret is to help you push forward. The whole point is to help you push forward. So I think that's the part where I do miss out. I feel there are times where I didn't have that relationship with my dad until when he passed. Then I get to learn so much about my dad.
Yeah.
I do wish if I were to turn back in time, I want to know more about what's my dad's liking, what does he enjoy. And you talk about food, right? Yeah, coincidentally, when you talk about grandma, my grandma passed, and I think we miss her ngoh hiang, and nobody can do that ngoh hiang. Her kaya,
gone, right? Impossible.
Yeah, her chili. So it brought back a lot of memory, and suddenly I was like, I wonder if AI could do something like that in the future where, like, okay, make me mom's recipe of this, right? And then,
We've got to start collecting a lot of data.
data. But the touch is different, right? The personal touch.
Yeah, and I also wanted to add on a very big piece of an important part of this 15-year journey. I realized I had closure. There are questions that I always wanted to ask my loved ones. I think all child wants affirmation from their parents. I ever asked my mom and dad point blank, right, in different settings, were they ever proud of me?
Wow.
Yeah, and when I got that, I realized I've got closure. Because I never knew whether being an Asian kid, right, I never knew whether they were happy with my performance, they are okay with how the way I turned out. And
that's what our Asian parents are, right? Never telling, you know? Yeah, tell everybody so, except you.
So I put them on camera, I...
Lovely.
Yeah, I said point blank, right? Were you ever proud of me? It's like, what the hell is going on, right? I needed this so that I can move on in my life. So I realized that these are questions and conversations that you should be having with your loved ones when they're around, because no point hoping and thinking that daddy is proud of you if we never ask.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think that's the part where it's very miscommunicated, that yeah. whenever you hear, even I've done a funeral where the father, so the wife passed, the father was telling me stories about his wife and the family, and he's actually very proud of the children, but he never articulates. So he shared with me, and then on the funeral day, I actually shared the story. And that moment when the father shared that how proud he and his wife were for the kids. And when we completed the funeral, the second son came up to me and said, I don't know what you did. Yeah. I don't know how you did it. My dad is a man of few words.
Yeah.
But the fact that you managed to get him to tell you how he was so proud of us, I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Because I think the kids never get that from the dad. Dad was a quiet one. Mom was the chatty one.
Yeah.
So mom has always been very verbal to tell the kids, like, you know, how proud she is.
Yeah.
But not the dad.
Yeah.
So when the dad told me, and I felt like, wow, that's like closure that you said, right? That is it, do you need to take the passing of one person
to have that
closure?
Yeah.
So I think that's important for every parent. Even I tell my girl a lot. My parents are not like typical parents, Asian parents, right? And with my daughter is different. We tell each other I love you, we hug, she comes over to cuddle, yeah, things like that that I don't want to miss out.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why we are the generation of change, right? We're in between the old school and the new school.
Absolutely.
But never stop hugging your loved ones, right? Because when I was young, I held daddy's hand when he crossed the road.
Mm.
Yeah, but for about of that 29 years at the start, I never held my dad's hands ever again, right? And recently, right, for the last 15 years, we've been doing it because, you know, I will tell him, daddy, can you be my father again and help me cross the road, because I'm scared to cross the road.
Yeah.
And my father, regardless of whether dementia or no dementia, right, will realize that
fatherly figure.
He is my father, right? Mm. And he will just say, hold my hand, we cross through it.
Nice.
Yeah, but I think that's important to have. Yeah. And even so, because you're part of a whole dementia community, right? And I have dementia 24/7 at home, you know, it's not like I deal with it only at the workplace. And then come home, I'm done. So for family caregivers, I think we have it a lot more intense, but the intensity can play out into becoming a good thing if we know how to do it right.
Yeah. Agree. In fact, I use this same theory with my daughter.
Yeah.
So whenever my daughter says she's scared, then I say, oh, mommy's scared too. Can you take care of me? Yeah. And then she immediately like, okay, you know.
Suddenly can, right?
Yeah. So I think don't get too hung up over like, oh, your role, my role. That's just titles. But if you were to reframe it and say, hey, you know, I think that could help a lot of communication.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And at 85, my dad is still teaching me things, right? Mm. Like wearing diapers.
Yeah.
I mentioned that story many, many times during COVID, right? I mean, he was sitting here watching TV, do his business in diapers. But one single day when I got frustrated, I said, you know, I put you in diapers. Because if you can't make it to the toilet, then we will be cleaning shit on the floor, right? So he said, I wear diapers, you wear diapers. But during COVID, we were doing a lot of things in Zoom, right? My realization is I can't shit and talk at the same time. I don't know how many of you can, but I can't do this and then shit at the same time, right? I have this pang sai bin. Everybody has, right? It's just that we don't look at ourselves in the mirror and shit,
shitting
right?
Face, yeah, okay.
Yeah, but he can do it with like just ease, right? And he's still continuing watching the TV, but I can't do it. I can't do it here. I can't do it sitting on a chair, and then I tend to get restless. I tend to trip over my words. I tend to stammer a lot because I need to shit. And I can't do it in a pair of diapers. So think about it again, right? Is it really necessary to put your loved ones in things like as simple as putting them in a pair of diapers?
Mm.
Is it because we, for ease of cleaning up? For what? Mm. For taking their dignity and shaming them? For what, right? If you yourself can't do it, don't expect someone else to be able to do it. So we go out bringing a lot of wet wipes, extra clothing, extra underwear, because if you soil, you soil. Yeah, and that's one of the stories that I wanted to say, hey, please don't take that away from them, the dignity piece.
Yeah, I agree. I saw my grandpa in diapers, and yeah, there's no dignity. That's why for my grandmother, we got them the sofa. Yeah, yeah. I hope that product, apparently people ask me where I get the product, so I hope they're still around.
Yeah.
But you know, I think after you've shared, you know, in every episode, we always ask this question that all of us have different journeys, and yours is, you know, exceptionally caring, care journey. Have you ever thought about your farewell?
Yeah, I did. Oh. And I wanted to do it as a celebration. I don't think I need a wake or a funeral as such, but I think that after a certain period of time, maybe an anniversary later, I would like to gather all my friends in a setting to celebrate my life. Maybe we can do it like a wedding ceremony, but with montages of myself and me talking and addressing people like I'm still there. So I think it's because we can be immortalized only in two things, right? In videos and in photography. Then of course videos of me and my friends.
You can have a hologram. College.
Yeah, even
like
a hologram.
Iron Man, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Even like that's called what? Tele something, right? Telepresence. Yeah. It could be done and pre-recorded before I leave, right? Yeah. And I will address individuals. I think that would continue, because if they continue to talk about me, I will continue to live in their hearts. So I don't want that conversation to ever run out, right?
Yeah. So what do you want people to remember you as? How would you like to be remembered?
I don't know. I don't really know it yet, because I haven't lived a bulk of my life yet. But I hope that I make a difference in people's lives in terms of... It could be a small thing, right? If my neighbors remember me for the coffee I make them, that would be cool. If the auntie remembers me for bringing my mom and dad down to patronize her food store, that would be cool, right? It's just... I think the conversations are different people's way of remembering me. I don't have an exact word for it, but I think someone will make a difference in your lives. But it could be minor little things. It could be the cleaning auntie at my workplace that says, hey, you know, you buy me bread every time we see each other. That's good enough for me. I don't have to be remembered for big things, right? Be big in person, but I don't need to. I think the simplest things are the most important things and the most valuable things.
Little things matters.
To hold. And I think if there's consistency in it, then it's not an act.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think if I can be remembered for that consistency and that genuine personality, I think that would be great.
Just one last thing. Is there any advice you have for our listeners? One piece of advice. In caregiving or...
I think we can only do the best we can for as long as we can for the ones we love so dearly. Why? It's because we can only be the best version of ourselves every day. I mean, I can't be Mei Mei here. I can't be my mom, I can't be my dad, but I can be the best version of Daniel Lim every single day. So I aspire to do that, and I hope you do as well. And I will say that in my last statement, right?
So live the best version of yourself every day. I really, really appreciate thank you for, and also Aki. Oh, I think he knows that we are ending, you see?
Yeah, when you say bye-bye, he will.
Oh, you know so much. Thank you so much. If you guys have any question for Daniel, where can they find you? Your Instagram?
Find me on Instagram, find me on the Enable Asia website.
Tell us a little bit about Enable Asia, because I support Enable Asia every year, and I want more people to know about Enable Asia.
So Enable Asia started about 6 years back, and it's me and my co-founder, which is Danny Raventhan. In fact, actually, both of us are family caregivers. He cares for his mother living with dementia, I care for my father living with dementia, but we are single child family caregivers. So basically, we do all we walk the talk in terms of caring for our loved ones, and we wanted to support others like ourselves. So we wanted to create a festival to celebrate caregiving, because caregiving, it's not always doom and gloom, that's what everybody hears, but it's always the precious conversations, the way we enable our loved ones through art, design, even music, because daddy comes alive when he sings, and things like that, right? Because we think that all these home interventions are what the landscape is missing. That's how we try and fill the gap, because the hospital can teach us how to make sure that hygiene must be maintained. But the hospital never teaches how to have that conversation with daddy or mommy in the toilet in saying, mommy, I have to shower you. So these are the kind of conversations we talk about it.
Yeah. So when is Enabling Asia usually?
So Enable Asia, Enable Asia runs an annual festival called the Enabling Festival. It usually is around the World Alzheimer's Day, which is about 22nd September. It runs across to the World Mental Health Month, which is in October. So we straddle around September and October, usually, because the well-being of caregivers is important to us, especially our mental health.
Yeah, definitely. So keep a lookout. Definitely, there's a lot of nuggets of wisdom. In fact, for those people who are regular listener, you will know that I actually interviewed Danny Raven Tan earlier. So you can check out the podcast as well. He's in my second season, I believe. So check it out, and he will share about his journey as well. Thank you so much, Daniel.
Thank you.
It's been so lovely to have you, and we shall see you for the next episode of Dying to Meet You.
See you.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to be in it, right?
You want to say bye-bye, right?
You want to say bye-bye. Oh my God.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the family home. So I live with mommy and daddy, but this part is my area. So welcome on in. So during COVID, we had to make sure that we separated ourselves as well, because I was working for a healthcare group, and we're going into the interventions with those who had early COVID, right? So I needed a space to really sleep in and be okay. And of course, as a caregiver, I needed my own special corner. So my corner is here. So this is my special sofa, which is a 1.5-seater. It's good for me and my dog. So because usually I don't need another human to hear me out. Most of the time he'll be there and he will, right? And that's, he knows his time to perform. So I get to work from home as well. I have to have an area where I need to do work, right? It's not just all play and we get paid for doing it. But I also need to make sure I have some of the amenities right. We put in the kitchen. It used to have a microwave and all the dry stuff that we can.
Aircon too.
Yeah, it's too hot this season. And we wanted a bit of green, so I have my exercise machines and all my own personal exercise stuff here as well, my weights and all that. And then we got the karaoke machines sorted out. So when we want to sing, we open this up for the family and he can sing. Yeah, that's my dad coming out. Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is this is my dad.
Hi.
My dad, Peter.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hi.
Yeah. Yeah. And then my mummy. Maybe he can go to the other side of the house.
Hey.
Oh, careful. Yeah. Come, you slowly take a walk. Yeah, so mommy is there. Yeah, careful, you can take a walk down. So this is the common...
Hello. Morning.
So this is the common
family
kitchen.
This is the kitchen, right?
Yeah, so we had our home upgrading done in 2019 as well. So we wanted to make sure that it's useful for both mommy and daddy.
Yeah.
And then the other side of the house, right? So we have a dining room as well.
The floor is capped.
The floor is capped. It's just that we changed the kitchen to non-slip.
That's very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we have all the handlebars in as well, just to make sure.
Toilet also.
So. And then so this is this is a cupboard of things to.
All your memories.
A little more engagement stuff. Yeah.
So
games.
I bought this too for my kids.
Yeah, so it works, right? All these little interventions that we could have. And then they need to maintain their blood pressure as well. So this is really something that they need to do. Yeah. And then this little wall of photographs are things to that he must remember.
Yeah. You like singing,
oh? Oh, yes, I like singing.
Yeah.
I like singing a lot.
Yeah, and then things that he needs to do so that every morning he can look at things.
Because
he switch off the light, you see, so he can see the things that
needs
he needs to do, right? Take medication, take blood pressure, eat, groom. Yeah, and then of course and then this is my mom's O-level work.
Oh, this is your mom's O-level? Wow!
So they do cross-stitching, right?
Painter.
A stitch set.
Stitching.
Oh my God.
So mommy is 80, right? So at 16, this thing has been like 60 over years.
Oh, wow.
So many years ago.
In there.
Antique,
right? Right?
Must keep, huh?
Yeah.
No, this is just my
to
treasure.
In London and then come back.
Oh, wow.
A distinction.
Yeah.
Got A.
And then this is just storeroom, right?
Wow, so. This is like, probably you won't see this kind of
No more.
Are you still doing it?
No more. During my O level.
Wow.
O level,
yeah.
I
mean. And then that's a secondary storeroom, right?
And then you have the book to explain
to the stitch,
how to do the stitch and all that.
Wow, amazing, man.
Color, all that.
Oh, yeah. So, nice. Welcome to Mommy and Daddy's room.
That is a huge room.
Yeah. So, it's quite nice.
And
the handlebars, and they got a bathtub too.
Oh, bathtub.
But they don't use the bathtub, it's for him, for this little guy. So he can go swimming at home,
it's
right?
For you.
Yeah. So he can go swimming at home, right?
Oh,
it's just.
For the IKEA.
The swimmer.
This is for IKEA?
No. Uh-oh. It is not, it's for him, IKEA.
Yeah.
And this show actually, because it came out in a show where it was Mama Teliu. So they redid the whole room for her.
I think I saw this. I didn't know it was your mom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just.
Wow. Beautiful.
That is my marriage certificate.
Yeah. Maybe wipe out some of the details. I'm just kidding. Like,
whose marriage?
My mom and dad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's really. It. And then we redid the cupboard for this is my grandma's. So
antique.
I redid the.
I move here. You say give to me.
Yeah, and then I redid this for her as well at the carpenters.
Yeah,
change.
Then we throw it away. We should have kept it. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was two things that I preserved from yesteryears.
Years ago.
Yeah.
Now we cannot get all this.
Yeah, auntie, very good. You know, have such a son who's always taking care of your family.
Yep, and that's it, really.
Wow.
So the.
Stop at one.
Mr. Lee Kuan Yew said stop at one.
So and then.
What keeps me, my memory, still maintain my memory?
Yes.
Because of my singing.
Wow.
So he had
so
this.
The songs are the words, I still remember.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And those words are. Helps me in other things that I will not be forgetful that what I do today and then often.
Wow.
Maybe not, but seldom I'll not remember. I will remember.
Nice.
But, yeah.
So he had all his friends with the singing in December last year. So they had a Christmas caroling at the Takashimaya outside.
Oh.
Yeah, but all the families living with dementia. Yeah.
Important to have meaning.
Yeah.
Wow, very nice. Oh, so cute.
Nice, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's really a little about.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So it's also important to have CCTVs at home.
Oh, yeah.
So
it's like taking care of kids. We also have
so much have at the dining as well as the bedroom, which is important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's time for lunch for you.
Yeah. Made hot from yesterday. Monday the market closed.
Oh, yeah, Monday.
Most Mondays.
I wanted to buy a pao, Tiong
Bahru
pao.
So that's.
Thank you.
That's it. And then, of course, the room is where I sleep. Yeah, so that's my bedroom.
That's where you can go to, right?
And then, because of that, we can go have our meals and all that. So it's within the family, but yet we still have a little enclosed area to. Do what we need to do, right? Yeah. So it's.
Thank you for this tour.
Yeah, and it's a simple setup to. At least I still have a private space. That's important for me. Okay, so. we can only do the best we can for as long as we can for the ones that we love so dearly.
Death has always been a certainty.
That's what I like about Anjali. It has to be a celebration.
Endless topics that we can talk about.
Dying to meet you.
Welcome to my podcast.